If you want another point of view, I've got that too. We are joined right now by a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo. He is co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. I consider him a very good friend of the program. Charles Robinson is my guest. Charles, what's up? How are you?
What's up, brother? How are you doing today?
Good, man. Good, good. Good to have you back. Listen, you and I have talked a number of times over the years. You've been around the game a long time. Let me start right here. Where does that Aaron Rodgers pass in the fourth quarter against Kansas City last night rank for you?
It depends on if he was trying to do that. Like, when I initially saw it, I was like everyone else. I'm like, that's the most unbelievable pass. I mean, other than maybe, Russell Wilson hitting Tyler Lockett in the left pocket of the end zone earlier this season. You cannot increase the degree of difficulty, and Rodgers is getting hit on that. And then when I saw the replay, I mean, it definitely looked like he was aiming the ball there. Like, it looked like a pass that he was trying to throw. It's just, I think what makes it so astronomically unbelievable is that even when you watch it in slow motion, you're like, I'm still not sure that it's too perfect a pass for him to throw, even for a guy like Aaron Rodgers. I just don't know how you can increase the degree of difficulty and actually mean to have been throwing it where Aaron Rodgers threw it. Like, if you don't get better than that. There's no way to improve upon that pass.
So was that the plan, or was he trying to throw it away?
I think he was throwing it into a direction and going, I hope my guy catches it. Like, I have a really hard time believing he thought, this is right where my guy is going to be. I'm going to throw it on a dime. But I'll say this. This is why when we go out to practices and we watch these guys throw into, trash cans that are 20, 30 yards down the field, and you think, how is that ever going to be applicable in a game? That felt like a trash can throw to me. That's like, okay, that's why I watch these guys literally put balls into trash cans, with a high arc 20 or 30 yards away. That's exactly the type of throw that was.
We're talking to Charles Robinson. All right, so one more thought about the Packers. I think a lot of credit goes to Kansas City for the way they showed up last night with all the injuries, but it's 7-1. How good are the Packers?
I think they're, to me, look, that's the force to be reckoned with in the NFC right now. I think the Packers, Matt LaFleur has gotten everything out of Aaron Rodgers that I think Mike McCarthy couldn't at the end last year. You know, I think Rodgers is having fun playing the game. He feels challenged. He feels like he can challenge Matt LaFleur, to be maybe some of the things that Mike McCarthy wasn't. If he feels like they're not being creative enough, if he feels like there are certain times at the line of scrimmage where, he wants to be able to switch into, things that make maybe he knew he'd get an earful from Mike McCarthy later about it. He feels like he has the control that he wants. Now he's got a running game behind him. And then, defensively, this is probably the one team that I think quietly upgraded more than any other team in the offseason. They shed some guys. I think they kind of felt like the grade on Clay Matthews was getting to the point where they needed to move on from him. There were just a number of guys that I think they needed to shuffle out. They revamped with some of the better free agent signings of the offseason. I don't know. I mean, it's, to me, the NFC is wide open, but I look at how the Packers are playing right now, the teams that they're beating, and the way Aaron Rodgers clearly feels about himself right now, and he's healthy, and I just don't know how there's any other team in the NFC you say that is clearly the number one over this one.
Charles Robinson, yes. He is a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo Sports. All right, so the Chicago Bears, let me move on, keep it in the division, though. They spent their entire offseason essentially blaming their postseason loss on their kicker. They seem to be absolutely fixated on that kicking issue all offseason, and then yesterday happens. Is it safe to say that their kicking issue has not been resolved and that kicking is not their only issue?
Well, Matt Nagy coming out and really backing Eddie Pinheiro as much as he possibly could. I think he knows it's because I have no options right now, but there's no doubt that the kicking issue isn't fixed, but that's not even their biggest issue. Like, we can get into, you miss field goals to lose games and that's devastating, but they made a decision at quarterback now that's not going away. You pass on Deshaun Watson, you pass on Patrick Mahomes, and you take a Mitch Trubisky who now looks like they've tried to make him into a pocket quarterback, and it is just not working. And the offensive line, particularly with Kyle Long out for the season, is nowhere where it needs to be for him to be a pocket quarterback. I think that's the alarming long-term issue there. That's the alarming issue for Matt Nagy's job security. Ryan Pace, the general manager there, there's a decision that was made on the quarterback now that's going to have lasting effects. And then you have these two guys in Deshaun Watson and Pat Mahomes who are constantly going to be linked to him every year moving forward. So we can get into the kicker, but look, this year and beyond, the next 2-3 years, and the destiny of both that coaching staff and that front office, I think is all on fixing Mitch Trubisky, and I don't know how many people in the league really think his game is fixable.
We are talking to Charles Robinson. All right, let me move on. Gerald McCoy, the Panthers, was getting his teammates fired up before that game against the 49ers and said repeatedly, we want all the smoke. We want all the smoke. And that's exactly what they got, right? All the smoke. San Francisco drops 51 on their heads. How impressed were you with the way the 49ers took apart a Panthers team that was playing pretty well coming in?
I mean, the 49ers up front defensively, it's remarkable that this is what John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, I spent some time with them in June, and they were like, look, our front seven defensively is going to be off the charts. So, like, as long as everybody's healthy, we think that we can dominate games with the front seven of our defense, and that is exactly what's happening. Like, Nick Bosa, talk about a guy who, I can't believe there were any down draft assessments on him, and if there were, you probably need to fire that scout, like, immediately, because this guy is not only a defensive rookie of the year candidate, he's a defensive player of the year candidate. He dominated that game up front. There was nothing the Panthers could do, you know, with him, and, you know, I think if you're running the football, Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, I still think with Kyle Shanahan, you don't want to get into games where Jimmy's throwing it 40-plus times. So to me, this is exactly the kind of game they want to play. Dominate teams defensively, show that you can run the ball, be efficient throwing it. The 49ers are 100% a handful. Like that to me, the Niners and the Green Bay Packers are the two where it's easy to look at them and say that's the class of the NFC right now, particularly with the Seattle Seahawks losing their starting center for the season.
Charles Robinson joining us. All right, let me ask you about the Browns. They're coming off another tough showing, this time losing to New England. Now, again, I've got to own this. I was not just on board with that bandwagon. I built that thing last year. I was driving it. I'm not still getting off just yet. But that said, what's your reaction when you hear Baker Mayfield say their issue seems to be, quote, consistency, discipline, and a lack of accountability, end quote?
It's like the holy trinity of the right? death spiral in your season. It's just, you could not have picked three worse words to come out of a starting quarterback's mouth, mostly because you're talking about three things that all lean heavily on the coaching staff. Like, you can say that, particularly lack of accountability. You can say that players have to be accountable, you know, to each other, but lack of accountability is never just a player problem. That's a head coaching problem, and everyone's looking at Freddie Kitchens right now saying, is this guy in over his head? Those three words, when he said that, I had flashbacks to Ben McAdoo with the New York Giants, another coach who essentially got chosen by Eli Manning. That's who he wanted to be the head coach of the Giants, appeared to be in over his head pretty quickly with the Giants. And now you're looking at Freddie Kitchens and you're hearing some of the same things. And lack of accountability was the number one problem with Ben McAdoo. If that's the number one problem with Freddie Kitchens, it's really difficult to fix that quickly. That has a lot to do with the locker room, whether your coach can be a strong enough leader. I don't know where the Browns are going to go with this, but I will say this about your bandwagon. Don't jump off just yet, because the back end of that schedule is very favorable, but it also suggests that if the Browns can't turn this around in the back end against a kind of a cream puff schedule, that means that you probably got to look at Freddie Kitchens and whether or not you made a mistake with that hire.
I'm not off yet. All right, so John Dorsey and the Browns have made no secret of the fact that they're in the market for an offensive tackle ahead of tomorrow's trade deadline. We know Trent Williams is still holding out in Washington. One source told you, quote, Dorsey has been trying to get Williams for basically 6 weeks, but Bruce Allen refuses to trade him. It's all Bruce. He won't do it, end quote. So, Charles, what is the argument for Washington refusing to trade a guy who simply does not want to be there?
There's no logical argument, like, at this point, because Trent Williams has made it known that I don't want to be in that organization, that he does not want to be in the organization with Bruce Allen. He doesn't trust Bruce Allen. I think he doesn't trust ownership. I think there have been so many things breached at this point that the only thing the Redskins can hope is that either there's a better offer in the offseason, or that, you know, Trent Williams just waves the white flag and says, fine, I'll show up next season. But he won't be happy. And it's emblematic of the things that the Redskins do wrong in their organization. Why are you going to keep a guy who a multitude of teams are offering good assets for to acquire him, and you're just saying, no, we're refusing because we're making a point here? It just doesn't make any sense. And it's, frankly, it's driving a number of NFL teams crazy, because they're trying to get Trent Williams. It's not like the Cleveland Browns have been the only ones to make the call to try and peel Trent Williams off that roster. and the Washington Redskins just aren't doing it, and it's in spite of logic at this point. And you know, that's frankly what the problem has been often with Bruce Allen at the helm of that organization.
It's a joke. It's the most Redskin thing ever. I mean, it's absurd. It's just personal, and it makes no sense whatsoever. Patriots are 8-0. They've already made a move from Mohamed Sanu. You've been talking to people around the league. Have you gotten the sense that the Pats are done making deals, or are they still looking for help?
No, they're still making calls. I mean, they're being aggressive right into the deadline, and I think they would like to upgrade the tackle position, or at least, you know, they're going to get Isaiah Wynn back, but I think they want to add some depth there, maybe some flexibility, because they know, look, you can never have too many quality offensive linemen to lean on in a playoff run. They have 12 draft picks left for next year. A number of those are compensatory picks, but, you know, look, their first, their third round pick, their fourth round pick, these are still assets that they can flip, particularly knowing that they're probably going to be at the end of all of those rounds. I think they're interested in acquiring a tight end. They've basically reached out to every, you know, general manager who's out there in the NFL who's been under the Patriots tree at some point. You know, Bob Quinn with the Detroit Lions, Thomas Dimitroff with the Atlanta Falcons, Jason Light with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and said, hey, you know, are you interested in dealing your tight end? I think, you know, Tyler Eifert with the Cincinnati Bengals, there's going to be a call made there. They're definitely looking to improve some of the pieces around Tom Brady, but I think what the one interesting thing is, I had an executive point out, hey, go back to 2016. They pick up Kyle Van Noy at the trade deadline from the Lions. Kyle Van Noy is going to be an astronomically paid free agent player this offseason. He's like, just because they are a great team defensively, don't rule out Bill Belichick stacking assets on a strength. He doesn't worry about that. He'll just figure, hey, we'll shut teams out in the playoffs.
Charles Robinson, my guest. One last thought. You made the point on Twitter that there could be some cornerbacks looking for a fresh start. Guys like Aqib Talib, Chris Harris Jr., Josh Norman, Janoris Jenkins, all big names. How many of these guys are legitimate difference makers, though, at this point?
It's like the damaged goods clearance aisle at the grocery store at this point with the aging cornerbacks. I mean, like, it's all those guys that you named at some point have been all pro players and yet are really suffering. I mean, look, Chris Harris of the Denver Broncos, top 10 cornerback right now. It will cost you to get him from the Denver Broncos. And I think he would also like to do a contract extension, but he's the guy in that group that's really worth it. I think NFL teams know that. I think Aqib Talib in the right situation, if he knows the system, he won't come off IR. He won't be available until very late in the season. So basically you're going to get him for really a game at the end of the schedule and then a playoff run if you're that kind of a team. I think Talib can still be helpful to a team. But if you're looking at, you know, Janoris Jenkins, if you're looking at a Josh Norman, these are guys that are very scheme specific and they have holes in their game at this stage. I still think the two guys that are probably worthwhile for a playoff or Super Bowl caliber team are going to be Aqib Talib and Chris Harris.
He is a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo, the co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. Charles Robinson, my man, such a good hit. Appreciate you very much, Charles. Thank you for doing that.
Always my pleasure, Jim. Take care.
Great content, man. Thank you very much. Really, really good stuff ahead of the trade deadline. Charles Robinson. All right, so we could talk about Green Bay. We could talk about Chicago. We can talk about the 49ers.